Hello, Gunn, and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, the podcast where two best friends, former internet idols and current comedy writers separated by 3,000 miles, assemble and update each other. So you might say we muster and catch up. I am one half of that podcast. Forgot to fill in this part. Daniel O'Brien, joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Soren Bowie. Soren, God damn it.
No, it's great.
So Keith at all.
I love the mustard and ketchup.
It's gold, first of all. Also, that you started with hello, a gun. It threw me at first, and then I thought, you know what? I like that.
Yeah. What happened was I am being mugged currently, and I only lost my cool a tiny bit. You could barely tell the listener because I didn't want to interrupt the flow of the show because we record and release the episodes live.
Yes.
So we can't take anything back. So a guy came into my apartment, tried to mug me, and I almost seamlessly wove it into the intro to the show.
I don't say this enough. You are a consummate professional.
Thank you.
I'm sorry for all your losses that you're suffering.
It's true you don't say that enough.
I'm going to say it a few more times throughout this podcast just to kind of catch up.
Thanks. Hey, there's catch up. How's everything going with your, we never really talk about on this show. We always mention that we're television writers, but we almost never talk about that. And I imagine if that's what drew you to this podcast, you'd be very frustrated.
I imagine you would.
They were like, yeah, there's a guy from Last Week Tonight and a guy from American Dad. What do they talk about? Fucking Twitter mostly, I guess. I don't know.
Talk about being lactose intolerant a lot.
Did a whole episode on Beowulf, different translations of Beowulf.
That's right. We did a translations episode. Hey, I like this podcast all of a sudden.
I know, right?
It feels very like, for not only inside baseball, but also kind of head up our own asses to talk about our jobs so frequently. I'm very happy at my job. I like it a lot. I'm doing a very fun Wheels in the Leg Man episode right now. And it's great.
That's good. I love that I'm not going to ask any follow-up questions because if there are people who have wanted to know what it's like writing for television, what it's like writing an animation, how to get started, what tips you have, and your only feedback after 85, 86 episodes of this show is, it's great, I like it.
Thanks to Hello Tushy for supporting Quick Question. Now, the brand new Hello Tushy 3.0 Modern Bidet Attachment is here to level the playing field. It's stylish, eco-friendly, easy to install, and affordable. Get 10% off plus free shipping and get your butt clean at hellotushy.com/QQ.
Let's thank Honey for sponsoring this episode. These days, it feels like online shopping is the only shopping we really do. That's where Honey comes in. It's the free browser extension that scours the internet for promo codes and automatically applies the best one available at checkout. Go to joinhoney.com/QQ. Let's move on and get into the show where we ask each other questions and give each other answers. I'm going to break form and not ask you a quick question.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah, I love it.
It's a long question, and it's like a nesting doll of questions within questions.
You know what? The point of order, we do this all the time. Our show is almost exclusively these. It should never have been called Quick Question.
Is that true?
We do a lot of
preface. Do we go on tangents? Is my manner of speaking for my entire career perhaps like a sentence that then leads to a parenthetical? Within the parenthetical, there are brackets, and no one's ever quite sure if those brackets close, and then we sometimes revisit the parenthetical, and it looks like a new sentence has somehow started within the parenthetical before we even revisit the original sentence. Is that true of me, do you think?
You are the infinite jest of humans.
That
reference is lost
sucks.
On you, isn't it? Only bros like you. That's the...
So my question is, if you could ask one question of successful people, let's say you got a podcast where you get a rotating group of people who are at the top of their field, mostly writer, comedian, movie people, like actors like yourself, they're very successful, and you could ask them one question. Do you have one that you would ask?
I mean, I got to think about it for a second. You have one.
I do
chamber,
have one,
right?
Yeah, yeah. It's one I think about a lot. And the question would be, do you still have to do this? It's obviously a question that I'm asking because I'm thinking about it all the time. It's a money question. Like there are some people, like, I feel like I wouldn't ask Tom Cruise, do you have to keep making movies to afford your lifestyle? Because I think I know the answer to that question.
Yeah.
No. And if I asked him the question, do you have to keep making movies? I know the answer to that question. Yes. I'm Tom Cruise. I have to keep making movies forever. It's my favorite thing in the world to do. I love it. That's what I imagine his answer is, some excited version of that, because he just sort of oozes, I love this job so much and I never want to do anything else. But I think about successful people who are not Tom Cruise quite a bit. Like, I'll think about someone like Ken Marino, who has been working in comedy as a writer, director, performer for most of my conscious life.
Yeah.
He was one of the founders of The State, and he's behind Wet Hot American Summer. Star of Party Down, that's right. Creator of shows, star of shows, director of movies, writer of movies, and...
plays the professor on an episode of American Dad.
Oh, great. That's some nice synergy. Every time I see him doing something new, I'm very excited that he's doing it, but I also wonder if he needs to. And I guess I have that question of anyone. I'd have it of like Craig Finn of The Hold Steady, mm-hmm. or any other, you know, name another band. Surely someone could name a band. Surely you get two people who have existed in the world for over 30 years could name a second band. Okay, well, so it's Craig
Finn.
You're
going to ask Dean Ween. If he still needs
to
play guitar.
Do you need to keep
doing this? Yeah.
Because I think my relationship to the creative work that I've committed myself to is shifting a little bit. Where, like, I'm not at a point where I could just stop writing this show right now. I still need money to live, and I'm going to keep doing it. And I don't, because I've never, I haven't reached a point yet where I've made so much money that I could retire from working. I don't know if I actually would, but I'm very curious about people who, in my brain, probably don't need the money anymore. And if they,
yeah,
like, when did that happen? You know, Ben Affleck, when did your financial advisor say, you know, you don't have to work another day in your life, period. You made a lot of money being a movie star for a couple of decades, and now you've got a lot of passive income because you own production studios and you're making residuals from things, your money's making money, you got points. You'd never have to work again. What, at what point was that? And then what was the conversation that you have with yourself of, well, I'm going to keep doing it anyway.
Right. Is this something you could live without doing?
Yeah.
That's a really good question. I think that I'm certainly in no position to be like quitting a job anytime soon because I'm not that wealthy, but I did think when I was at Cracked, I was very excited because we were writing and we were performing. And I always thought back in the days when I wanted to be an actor, I was like, yeah, but I also want to be a writer. Like, is there something I could do that's both? And found a job like that. And then when I left Cracked, I was very concerned about the fact that I would no longer be acting at all or performing. I probably wouldn't be doing stand-up. I wouldn't be doing sketches. And part of me was like, I've never been in a situation where I just gave all that up. I wonder if I can. And the answer was resoundingly, yes, you can. It was very easy to just not do it anymore. There are aspects of it that I miss, but I still, like, I would never go back to it. I'm like, no, this is great. What I'm doing now is very great. It's satisfying me. So I don't know. I think it's also, you got the issue of as soon as people retire, they die generally because they don't feel like they have any sort of, they're not necessary in relationship to the world anymore. At least that's the way it feels. And that's maybe an unhealthy relationship that we have to our jobs in the first place, that that's where we get our sense of accomplishment. But I don't know. I think that I think once you gave it up, you probably be like, oh yeah, you know what, this is fine. But in the moment, you're like, no, I could never give this up. It's everything. Yeah. It's everything to me.
It's tough because I can't tell if humans are designed a certain way, if I'm designed a certain way, or if I've been brainwashed, because
right.
I was born into a world that was ruled by capitalism, and I was born into a world where it's weekdays are for school and then later jobs, and you do these things so you can have the weekends, and then you expand that out to you do your job so you can have vacations, and expand that out to you do your career so you can have retirement. And that feels very natural, but it was also the thing that we were all born into, so I'm not even really sure if that's conditioning or not, or if someone just said, tomorrow there's a new system, guess what, money's not real, you don't have to do anything. I think there's still a chance that I was like, okay, great, well I have a writer's meeting for last week tonight, so I'm going to go and do that because that's what I want to do right now. But I also don't know, maybe I want to go scuba diving.
Right.
I think I bring up scuba diving because I've been thinking a lot about this very silly person who was like a millionaire, if not a billionaire, that we both knew because he owned a company that we worked for. One of the many owners that we had when we worked together. Big flashy guy, drove silly cars, really liked the idea of knowing supermodels and knowing famous people.
Yeah, just dropping names.
Yeah, yeah. And he, like, his clothes were expensive and he liked to tell you that. And he liked that he lived in Malibu. He liked surfing. He liked taking trips. He liked helicopters. All these things that he was like bragging to me about when I was 22 years old. And I remember being 22 and thinking, what a silly, stupid man. You don't make anything. You're not like creating anything. You're not doing anything. You're trying to impress a 22-year-old, which is absurd. And you're just this big goofy thing running around taking pictures of supermodels on your phone and then showing them to people.
Yeah.
And that's not a life that I want, that specific thing. But I also think this is a guy who made so much money that all he does is like fucking cartwheels in the sand. And I think the things that he likes are stupid, but I don't know. He doesn't.
Right. Yeah, he's just like living. He gets to actually live his life as opposed to he's grinding it out every day. He would wear board shorts to meetings sometimes. But like that he seems very happy. He seems very content in who he is. I don't know. As a parent, I've started to, my perspective has shifted. It's like the need to get something out on paper, the need to write has really dissolved a lot. Like I write now for my job and I enjoy doing it when I do write, but I shouldn't say that. I enjoy writing when I've just finished writing something.
Yes. Yeah.
But that's not, I do look forward to the day where I don't have to do that ever again. Like I like the idea of spending time with my family or like doing things on my own that are just mine and that I'm not being paid for or anything, like building furniture and things like that. The idea of retirement is still very attractive to me. I'm not terrified of it.
Yeah, I'm not either. And I apologize if I was misleading and made it think that I am. I lean more towards like let's all retire now and then figure out what we want to do. And it might turn out that what we want to do is work.
Right.
But like we won't know until we wipe out all money. That's what the podcast is about now, Soren. Surprise.
There's not a better podcast to say it. Because what are we doing this podcast for? I think I would like to ask them, do you drive your own car? Because for any celebrity, that informs an awful lot about them. I grew up knowing Don Johnson, and that was a man who never drove his own car. He had cars, but he had drivers generally. If he was in San Francisco or like a city, he had drivers. And there's a good reason for that, because if you're ever in an accident, it becomes a really big issue if you get into an accident and the other person sees who you are, because that immediately they know you're, or at least they think you're wealthy, and then it's you like the chances of it going to court and becoming like a real big thing increase dramatically.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people with enough money, like at the some tier, they just stop driving themselves places. And what that must be like to have to be driven everywhere that you go. That means you're at a level also where you probably don't want to be recognized anywhere. You can't walk into a grocery store and you can't go into a drugstore and get your Claritin. Like you can't just pop in like a normal human being. It like becomes a real thing. When you go to a dinner party, like you, whether you, it's your event or not, you're stealing the thunder just by being there. And like what that must be like to exist where as a, I mean, that's why we call them stars, I think, because like people can't help but orbit around them. Like you just have this gravitational pull no matter where you go, and it can really disrupt the rest of your life. And I want to know a lot about that. I want to know what that's like for them.
That makes me wonder what we would call a normal thing that you're very excited about. Like, would Don Johnson get excited if he was somewhere where he wouldn't get recognized and he could drive a car? Was that like a thrilling prospect to him?
Right.
What normcore shit is Matthew McConaughey super stoked that he gets to do?
Matthew, I could really see Matthew McConaughey using Netscape or using an old school browser in a library and just like laughing to himself that he's in a library and like really enjoying it on a gateway computer.
Especially, I wonder for someone like Matthew McConaughey, who's got such a recognizable voice, and even if it wasn't recognizable as a famous person's voice, it's like kind of a silly sounding voice. Yeah. So I think, like, is it impossible for him to call Verizon when his Fios is acting up? When he's like, just, you know, insert an impression of Matthew McConaughey there, where he wants to complain about how he can't get something streaming on his TV. And they're like, oh my God, Matthew McConaughey? You can't get, what are you trying to watch on Showtime?
Mud.
Please help me, Mud.
It must be impossible. Like, there's so many daily things that are already annoying to me, and how much more annoying they become if everybody you talk to along the way is like has to stop you and be like, I know you. I know who you are.
Right. I wonder if like Hugh Jackman orders something in a restaurant and it comes back and it's wrong. And he's like, well, I guess I just have to sit here and fucking eat this, because otherwise it's going to be on the Daily Beast tomorrow that Hugh Jackman sends back his chicken piccata. Yeah, and I can't do that. Imagine. I have to eat it and then leave $1,000 tip.
Exactly. Yes. No matter where you go, you also have to tip 300%. Otherwise, it becomes a news story because you're a stingy asshole. Like, you can't just get away with being a normal person anywhere in your life. It's like you are a representative. I think that would be very interesting to find out more about. And that gateway always feels to me like that. The first time I really noticed it was Don, where it was like, holy shit, I don't even know if you know how to drive.
Yeah. I would really, I would ask all of these incredibly famous, like the most famous people, not in a like dorky cliche, when did you realize you were famous kind of way. That's you're always fishing for someone to say, when I heard my song on the radio or when I saw my poster in the movie. But like, Tom Hanks, when did you realize you're Tom Hanks and you belong to the people now? Because you hear all these like, everyone who's ever met Tom Hanks thinks he's the nicest person in the world. Everyone who's met Meryl Streep has a Meryl Streep story, and that's not a coincidence. She's not an alien. She knows I'm Meryl Streep, and Meryl Streep stories are a thing, so I need to give it to this person. And like, at what point did that click for you? Did you realize like, oh, I'm not allowed to be a dick anymore. If I go out the house as Meryl Streep, I have to remember that I belong to the people now. I'm this heightened version of myself that exists for everyone else. Okay, I can do that. Because some people, you see, they've made that trade-off and they're fine with it. The Hugh Jackmans who are like, I have to be Hugh Jackman everywhere I go, and then I'll go home and I'll slam the low keys on the piano. Or the actors who have chosen to go the other way, where Russell Crowe is like, I don't know anybody, any shit. I'll punch a hotel clerk right now. I don't care.
Right. Yeah, the main thing, though, is that you can never turn off who you
are. Right.
Like, we are, all of us, a lot of different people. I mean, we're whatever serves us in any given circumstance. You know what your relationship dynamic is with your family, and it's very different than the relationship dynamic you have with your friends.
Right. So at work, I'm Daniel. At night, I'm the jackal.
That's right. You're the jackal. Of course. Famously the jackal. And it's... You wear a lot of different hats, and you're only allowed to wear one hat when you're a celebrity. I mean, maybe you have some sort of different relationship with your family, but outside of that, like, you can't walk into a new situation with a stranger and be like, well, let's see what I am today. You are whatever they know you to be, and that's got to be tough. I think I would also, like, in relationship to that, once they realize they were famous, I'd want to know if their demographic is who they thought they'd be. Like, the person that the group that they appeal to the most, is like that the fan base you thought you'd have? I don't know if you'd get a candid answer about this, certainly not on a podcast, but I'd want to know if they are disgruntled by that, if they are embittered by their fans, or if they're like pleasantly surprised that they're so popular among old people or whatever it is.
Right. There was that Chuck Klosterman interview years ago with Morrissey, where it turns out that he has a huge fan base of young male Latino teenagers. And when Klosterman, like, did all the research and found this was a huge part of Morrissey's demo and brought it to Morrissey, Morrissey was like, yeah, that makes sense to me. I believe that. And I want to say, no, it doesn't. Shut up. You're allowed to say it's weird. That wasn't the plan.
Elaborate.
You can still
tell us.
You can say you're happy. You're thrilled the music connects with anybody. And while you can't pinpoint the reason, your music belongs to whomever finds any kind of comfort in it. But you can't just sit there and pretend this isn't a highly specific thing.
Yeah. It must be so confusing when your demographic is not who you thought they'd be. And you can see people like trying to escape their demographic badly. Like Dave Chappelle. Like, he had to leave because his demographic was not who he wanted it to be at all. And he was like worried about it in the hands of these people, the things he had created. And I imagine that must happen just constantly. Unless it's not something you ever even thought about. You became famous on accident and you're just like, whoa, whoever it is, that's who it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's what I'd want to know. Hey, everybody. Mother's Day is right around the corner. And you might be thinking, why do I get the woman that's already got it all? Well, ladies and gentlemen, what about the gift of thinking about her ass? Return the favor with the perfect gift for Mother's Day from Hello Tushy. Forget the flowers. Ditch the gift cards. Mom deserves something that will last her a lifetime of flushes. Right, everyone? Give mom the gift of a clean butthole. I know you go through your life every day thinking about things other than your mom's butthole. You might be trying to think about something other than your mom's butthole right now. I encourage you to stop that. Cut that nonsense out right now. You take a minute, close your eyes, just picture it. Don't you want it to be clean? I do. I want your mom's butthole to be clean. This spring, give the gift that tells your mom, I care about you and you deserve a clean butt. That's Hello Tushy. Your mom's dealt with your shit for years. Wow, we're allowed to say shit here. Shit, 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 shit. Say thanks with a gift that'll deal with hers. A new bidet from Hello Tushy. But the best thing you're going to be getting out of Hello Tushy is that it doesn't just clean butts like a champ. It also cleans itself with a Smart Spray automatic self-cleaning nozzle. Smart Spray, by the way, don't try and use it for any of your own things at home. That's trademarked, my friends. It's the Smart Spray automatic self-cleaning nozzle. It'll take care of itself. When we say anyone can put this shit together, we mean even your parents. Shit, 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 shit. Yes, yours. Hello Tushy 3.0 attaches to their existing toilet with no electricity, extra plumbing, or tech support, FaceTimes, and it cuts toilet paper use by 80%. Listen, this is not a technology your parents will be afraid of. This is one that they can embrace. They will understand it immediately. It's so intuitive. Plus, every Hello Tushy bidet attachment comes with a 60-day risk-free guarantee and a 12-month warranty. So if your parents sit on it for a little while, for like a month and a half, and they decide this just isn't for us, they can send it back to you, and you can send it back to Hello Tushy. And listen, if your parents already have a Hello Tushy, if they're not virgins to the Tushy, blow her away with an upgrade to the new Hello Tushy 3.0. If she's new to the revolution, have her join millions of Hello Tushy customers right now for a clean butt with every flush. Your mom's butthole deserves it. Give the gift of a clean butt. Go to hellotushy.com/QQ to get 10% off plus free shipping. This is a special offer for our listeners at hellotushy.com/QQ for 10% off. hellotushy.com/QQ. Well, if we've squeezed all the water from that stone, I have a question for you, Dan.
Yeah, I think you better ask something. I moved on. I started looking at Twitter.
Oh, boy. That's a bad sign.
Sucks.
Yeah. It's like intentionally going to sit in traffic instead of this.
It was like a very difficult thing to explain to my parents the last time I saw them that, and my buddy, because I had this conversation twice recently about how if I lose a day to anything, it's Twitter. It's just parking myself in one spot and refreshing it all day. And my buddy was trying to give me the benefit of the doubt. I was like, well, you work for a topical show. You need to know what's going on in the world, and you need to be aware of trends. And I'm like, brother, I am not doing that. Yeah. That's not what I'm getting out of Twitter. I'm getting no joy. I'm getting no information. It's like it's a real thing. It's a real problem. I'm just staring at this fucking thing and looking at it, and it never stops moving. So there's always something for me to look at and like get splashed with,
but I gain nothing from it.
Here I am on it.
All right, dude, quick question.
Yep.
When you were in high school, also, I think college can be included in this. Did you ever hang out with your teachers outside of school?
Once.
What did you guys do?
I got my sophomore English teacher to come see my band play, but she waited until I graduated high school.
Oh, that's very nice of her.
Because I was this was like the cute teacher, and my friends and I would loudly hit on her throughout 4 years of high school. If she was only our teacher for 1 year, but like that didn't stop us from lusting after her for all of this time, and I was always asking her to come see my band play, which she wouldn't do. And then finally I graduated high school and she came to see us at the Stone Pony in Asbury Park. And I was like, Miss, her last name here. It was Mrs., by the way. She was super married. But I talked to her after the show and she was like, yeah, I wasn't going to see you when you were a student, but I can see your band now. Congratulations. This is my husband. Goodbye. And then, a couple of times after that, my buddy Joe and I would meet up with her at Chili's for not like dates or anything like that.
No,
some meal
just to catch up.
Yeah, some like thing between lunch and dinner, because this wasn't a real thing. Like I'll have dinner with friends and family and dates, and I'll have lunch with normal people too. But like in between, yeah, I'll split an app with my former teacher. That's fine. We'll go to Chili's and I'll drink iced tea and have bottomless chips. And like, how's your husband? Still teaching soccer? That's cool.
Still your husband. Yeah, I think that that's great. I think it's great that she came. I'm really kind of disappointed that she didn't get very, very drunk there. Just like, you're no longer a student. The mask is off. Dad, I always thought you were the best one.
I would love it if she came to that show. I was like, all right, I couldn't go when you were a student, but I went now. You guys fucking blow.
Yeah, I was always worried about this when I was your teacher, because it wouldn't be ethical for me to say how bad you are. But now that you're no longer my student, wow. I would have thought over all this time you had enough practice. This is not good.
Give up your fucking dreams.
Okay, this is my husband. I'm out. He's huge, isn't he? He's big. He's big and muscular. Look how much taller he is than you. Stand next to each other. Let me get a picture. You're just a boy. Yeah. But I was just, the reason I'm trying to get my bearings with this is because I think that I had a highly irregular high school experience. And the the teachers lived on campus. And they were required to live on campus. So you saw them all the time. And they lived a kind of among the students, basically. And so you had unprecedented access to your teachers, which means that they could never like shut off as a teacher. They always had to be that role, and like aware of the dynamic between them and a student. But it also meant that you understood your teachers more as people, I felt, because you were totally aware of the relationships that were forming between teachers. Adultery that was taking place was incredibly hard to hide. And these are the things that happen at any school, and of course happened at our school too. And then also these friendships that you build with them as well. When I was in high school, my advisor was 7 years older than me. So it's like, he's just a kid himself, basically. Like, he was fresh out of college. And my friend Max and I were like very good friends with our advisor. We'd go out with him. Like, we wouldn't go drinking with him or anything because he was fairly responsible in that capacity. But like, he was our buddy. And what a complicated situation that must have been for him. To just like, every time we'd ask him questions about the women on campus, for him to be like, you know, I can't talk about that. Or to hear our stories about the girls.
Right. That's so weird. I have no context for your specific thing because it seems normal within the parameters of your objectively abnormal upbringing.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like if there was a teacher who was routinely hanging out with high school students and talking to them, the only thing I could think about is that high school teacher then interacting with their actual friends their own age and how much their friends would hate that. Like, if one of my friends in real life right now was like, oh yeah, I meet up with my students after school at Fridays twice a month to just sort of like talk about life and stuff, I'd be like, that's fucking crazy. What are you doing? What are you getting out of this exchange?
Don't do that. It's only liabilities at that point. I can remember going into the cafeteria and sitting down at a table where a teacher and another student were sitting, because it wasn't some meeting like it would be at any ordinary school. That was just some people shooting the shit and sitting down and listening to my teacher tell this other kid in the mid story about the first time he did acid on a beach and what that was like. And that was just par for the course. It's just like the way things run there. You'd also see them not just date among each other, but you'd see them bring home other dates from town because you were in campus the whole time. And then you ask there was no filter from the students because we have nothing to lose. So we're like asking about them the whole next day at class. It derails the entire class. It seems like a very unhealthy thing. Now that I'm an adult and I look back on it, I'm like, oh.
That's so insane to me.
Yeah.
Were there any teachers that were really good about having a private life?
I'm trying to think. It really was about proximity. There were a couple teachers who didn't technically live on campus. They lived just off campus, like across a river, and it felt like they were a million miles away. Like, they had their own life.
Yeah, I feel like there must have been someone who was like, no, 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 I grew up in a city. This is weird. I'm here for the job. And you kids don't get to see who I'm dating.
No, there was none of that. They just accepted that this is the way life was. I mean, I guess there were a couple teachers that we noticed like a Southern Lit teacher and the student advisor suddenly forming a relationship. And of course we're like, what's going on? What's going on with you two? Are you dating? What's going on? And them being like, just be cool, please. Please. I don't know what it is. And then I tried to continue that at Occidental, and I really ran into some problems because I that just seemed normal to me. And then I had a teacher at Occidental who I really liked. He was just such a cool, good guy, and he liked the classics in a way that made me very excited about them. And I would go to him and I'd be like, hey, we're going to watch the football at our house. Do you want to come? And our house, of course, is a college house. So it's like disgusting. There's like somebody sleeping on a mattress in the living room. And I was like, do you want to come watch football? And he was like, yeah, maybe. And he never actually came. And I was like, man, he's a flake. But now I look back on it, I'm like, no, he wasn't.
Yeah.
That he was trying to keep a healthy distance from a student.
What a kind maybe. Yeah. What a generous man.
Yeah. And I just didn't understand it at the time. But yeah, it was another, just chalk this up as another experience from high school that was abnormal and then messed me up forever.
Sure. We all shop online. You do it, I do it. Soren does it, everybody does it. And we've all seen that promo code field taunt us at checkout. But thanks to Honey, manually searching for coupon codes is a thing of the past. Honey is the free shopping tool that scours the internet for promo codes and applies the best ones it finds to your cart. Honey supports over 30,000 stores online. They range from sites that have tech and gaming products to popular fashion brands and even food delivery. Okay, so picture it. Picture it in your mind's eye. You're shopping at your favorite online websites, and then you're at checkout. The Honey button drops down, and all you have to do is apply coupons. You don't have to go back to the old podcast you listen to and try to find a promo code. There's no Googling. Honey does it for you. You apply the coupons. You wait a few seconds as Honey searches for coupons it can find for that site. And if they find a working coupon, you'll watch the prices drop. Honey has found its over 17 million members, over $2 billion with a B, dollars in savings. Now, personal experience, Honey wants to know what it saved me money on. Oh, it's saved me money on clothes. What clothes? It wants to know. Socks. I got socks with lobsters on them. I wanted lobster socks. Nautical themed stuff is super in this summer, so get your lobster socks. And now they want to know how much money I saved. Be specific. $8. If you don't already have Honey, you could be straight up missing out on free savings. It's literally free and installs in a few seconds. And by getting it, you'll be doing yourself a solid and supporting this podcast. Get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/QQ. That's joinhoney.com/QQ. The idea of students asking teachers if they were in love or if they were dating rings true for me only as a camp counselor with little kids who would ask us. It's like, are you and Jamie in love? And we're like, yo, shut the fuck up. I don't know. I don't know yet, man. Stop it. You're 8. I'm 17. Neither of us know what we're doing here.
That's like the perfect tracing of this, I think, is that because you're forced to be there with the kids. You live there with them. You only ever see the other faculty there. And it's, you're young too.
Yeah.
So it must be very, very similar to that. And if Wet Hot American Summer is anything to base it on, it's a huge disaster.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, we had, man, there's nothing we live for more than the salacious stories of teachers cheating on their significant others or starting new relationships. We just went nuts for that shit and we let them know.
That whole idea is really foreign to me because certainly it's fun speculating if a teacher is dating or sleeping with another teacher. That's like a fun thing, a rumor to start and play with based on nothing. And thinking about teachers dating, period, is like a whimsical thing to do. But we really, entering high school, felt like, well, the teachers are here because their calling is to teach students. And that's their primary directive in life. And that's what they're that's surely what they spend all their time doing. Completely ignoring the fact that a lot of these are like 20-something people who are looking, who like, yeah, my job is a teacher, but I'm trying to like live my life and eventually not teach horny 15-year-olds about Shakespeare.
You're right.
The idea of them dating was like a fun thing to think about, but that none of us ever really took seriously because it was like, well, you know, this is all fun and games, but obviously they can't fall in love because their job is to teach us.
Yeah, of course. You don't, they're not people. That's why it was so weird to see your teachers out in the real world when you were in like, well, for me, when I was in middle school or elementary school, because it was like, no, surely you just sleep at the school.
Right.
But in my case in high school, they really did sleep at the school and we did too.
It's just bonkers.
Yeah.
I think that about wraps things up for me. I just have to go. I've been recording this on my home personal computer, and I have all of our social accounts that I need to share with the audience. I have that on my phone computer.
Oh, no.
So I need to go get that.
Oh, no. Yeah.
And while I'm doing that, I wanted to give you space because you're a multi-talented guy. Everyone, you're an actor. Famously, you're an actor.
Famously.
But what people don't know about you, they know you as a little actor, but they don't know that you also dabbled in songwriting. And when I met you, you first told me about and then performed for me a song. I'm not going to make you perform it now. But do you remember this song, Labor Day?
Yeah.
Do you want to use this space to tell people what that song was about?
Sure. Labor Day is a completely real song that I wrote, and it was all about how much better I would be at giving birth than women, and how they do a really good job, and it's pretty impressive, but like how like I'm like 100 times stronger and I would just like rule at this one particular task. Like I felt very left out of the opportunity to give birth. And then also that I would basically kick anyone's ass at it, that I would be number one at giving birth. Not a song that's probably stood the test of time.
Am I wrong in remembering that part of the song was dedicated to how you wouldn't complain about it?
Probably, yeah.
Okay.
I don't remember all the lyrics, but it was like, it was the verses were always like, what a miracle this is, that you're doing this. I'm so impressed. And then the verse is all like, but come on, let's be real. I could do it better. I think if I went and looked at the lyrics, I'd be like, ooh, it's a good thing we never put this on the site. I don't want this living in the real world.
You can ask Soren if he has those lyrics still on Twitter at Soren_LTD. You can find me on Twitter because I can't get off it at @DOB_INC. You can find the show on Twitter at @QQ_SorenandDan. You can email the show at QQ with Soren and Daniel@gmail. And you can find, hire, and praise our engineer, editor, producer, good buddy, Gabe, by tweeting at Soren and telling him to tell Gabe he did a good job. That is the fastest way to reach him.
I wish that wasn't true.
About it for our show. We have a Patreon, and we're doing it, guys. If you're on Patreon, you get a thing that other people don't get once a month. That's really something special.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I'm talking like I'm tucking myself into bed right now.
It does sound like you're sort of falling asleep. okay, bye.
Bye.